This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Welcome to episode 124 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest tonight has made a remarkable comeback to the competitive Magic scene in the last 6 months, which includes winning a Grand Prix, qualifying for the Pro Tour, and being invited to participate in the 2014 Community Cup. He is my buddy, Paul Cheon. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi, thank you for joining me tonight.
It's good to be here.
I'm so happy that I got you. You've been so busy lately.
Yeah. I mean, I know we talked about me possibly being on the show earlier, but I, of course, had to test for Washington, D.C., which was, you know, not very expected, but it is what it is. But it's finally good to actually be on the show with you. We were, of course, teammates in the Community Cup, and that was probably the most fun I've ever had playing in a Magic tournament.
Right. You know, it's funny. I feel so privileged to have gotten to play with you because I feel like that happened right before or right as you were about to blow up. So I got to say I was on a team with Paul Cheon, and then all of a sudden you started streaming again and the stream took off and then everything started happening and I got you right before you got big. And that's a really good feeling to watch you from home and be like, I was on a team with him. And because who gets to say they got to play with Paul Cheon? I mean,
yeah. It was one of those things where, I started doing the streaming thing and it was, you know, slowly picking up steam, and I decided to, you know, start doing it full time, and, you know, was basically just trying to see if I still had what it takes to play at the highest levels of the game, because you know, I took a lot of time off of the game and I just gave myself a little bit of time and tried to devote a lot of time to playing Magic and getting better, and a lot of things kind of swung in my favor. Mm-hmm. And it actually, allowed me to qualify again. And a large part of that, of course, is due to my amazing teammates. Mm-hmm. I am very, very good at drafting players. maybe not drafting limited decks, but players for sure. As I had both Luis Scott Vargas and currently the hottest player in the world, Eric Froelich, on my team.
Yeah, he's been on a hot streak lately.
Yeah, he's been absolutely unstoppable. You know, in some of the other Team GPs, we gave him basically the worst deck. I'm sorry, we gave him the best deck. We gave him the best deck, and he's like, oh, yeah, but obviously I won all my matches. And we're like, yeah, but you had the best deck. In this Grand Prix, we gave him what was easily the worst deck on our team, and he still went 9-0 day one just to further prove his mastery. And then he managed to parlay that into a top eight in Pro Tour Washington, D.C., which, in my opinion, should cement him as a he should basically, in my opinion, he should be a lock for Hall of Fame this year.
That reminds me of there's a saying that people like to say about John Finkel, where they say John Finkel could win a Grand Prix with a ham sandwich, and I hear variations of that sometimes. And you were talking about Ifro giving him, you know, a certain kind of deck and he can still pull through. That's what that reminds me of, where you can give Ifro anything and he'd do well.
Yeah, he is on top of his game right now. He's like in the zone. You know, a lot of things have to had to go well for us for that tournament, but the one constant thing was Ifro winning his matches. So, really, really happy for him. He's already locked up platinum for next year, halfway through the pro season. and like I said before, you know, if anybody listening does have a vote for Hall of Fame, Ifro should definitely be at the top of that list.
Absolutely. So I want to talk about your last 2 weeks, because from me watching at home, it feels like it's been a blur, and I can only imagine what you've been going through. So let's start off with, you start off with San Jose. You go to GP San Jose. And was this planned? I mean, like, did you go to San Jose thinking, okay, I've got to win this so I can go to the Pro Tour? You know, how did this happen?
Yeah, these past couple of weeks have just been unreal. Yeah. Like, it's all been like a dream. It's just been a blur. Like, you know, after Grand Prix Denver, I had 14 pro points, and I needed 6 pro points between Grand Prix Omaha and San Jose to get a silver invite to Pro Tour DC. That was the only way I was going to qualify. And I just thought, well, getting 6 pro points between 2 Grand Prix is a really tall task. It's probably just incredibly unrealistic. I have to get a babysitter. I just have to do all these things. It's just going to cost a lot of money. You know what? Screw it. I'm just not going to go to Omaha. And I was just like, well, even if I don't go to Omaha, I guess if I just win San Jose, I'll qualify for the Pro Tour, you know, but just as a joke, because I mean, it's just so it's so unlikely. I know I have great teammates, but still, yeah. Like, this is a 2,000 man tournament. And I was just like, whatever, I guess if I win, I'll make it. But so with that mindset, I skipped Grand Prix Omaha, played in Grand Prix San Jose. And, you know, honestly, like, while I was playing the tournament, I felt a lot less pressure than I did playing in any other tournament. And a lot of that was just based on first of all, I didn't really expect to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I knew we had a good chance, but it's just like, it's still really hard to win a big tournament. And secondly, I was already qualified for Pro Tour Brussels through to top 8 Grand Prix Denver. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, well, I mean, you know, I'm already qualified for Brussels. I'm probably not going to win this thing. So let's just play, have fun, win as many matches as we can. Mm-hmm. And then we 9-0 day one.
Wow.
And then we went 3-0 day two, and we basically were locked for the top four. And honestly, the only time I actually felt pressure was when I made the finals. Because mm-hmm. So now we're in the finals. I'm locked for 5 pro points, which puts me at 19 pro points. And I would have felt really stupid for losing if I lost in that finals and was 1 point short of qualifying for DC and I didn't go to Omaha.
Yeah.
And fortunately, you know, I was able to have some good draws in an exciting last match against Paul Rietzel, mm-hmm. and managed to pull it out.
Yeah.
So even after it happened, I just couldn't believe, like, I was just like in shock.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that this actually happened. I mean, I've been so close to qualifying over the last year since I've moved back to the States, and every single time it seemed like I fell short. And to get that feeling once again of actually being qualified again for the Pro Tour, it was just an amazing feeling. And I can't thank my teammates enough. You know, Luis and Yifra are two of the best players on the planet. And I feel very lucky to be able to call them my teammates.
Yeah. So you win that GP, and then the Pro Tour's next week. Like, how did you do this? I mean, did you get any practice in? Like, how did that go?
Well, so what happened was a lot of the members of Team Channel Fireball, and I guess we actually had a merger for this Pro Tour, several members of Team Face to Face also joined us. So we had Sam Pardee, Jacob Wilson, Josh McLean, a lot of the Canadian guys. They actually all showed up to San Jose a week before the GP because they wanted to play in the team GP. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, might as well show up a week ahead of time and test for the Pro Tour. And because they were in town, I was like, well, this should be fun. I actually went over a couple times just to practice drafting with them and testing Modern, even though I wasn't qualified for the Pro Tour.
So, and then you show up like, hey, guys, I'm on the team.
Hey, remember me? Like the guy that was recording, you know? You needed an extra person for Ultimate Frisbee, and I showed up. Yeah, that's me. I was, and not only that, I played a lot of Modern in the past, and honestly, the format wasn't very different. Like we were sitting there the day before the Pro Tour started. We're like, all right, well, we're gonna play this blue, red, white control deck or junk. Which should it be? And guess what? The metagame 4 months ago, exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was fortunate enough to once again be part of Team China Fireball, and I showed up to DC, and it looked like nobody had a deck. People were like, yeah, we don't know. You know, nobody was able to break the format.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, Modern's a very established format. A lot of the pros actually just do not like Modern because of the fact that there's just not a whole lot of room for innovation because – so few cards affect kind of there's not that many cards in every new set that can actually like heavily impact Modern, because Modern plays so many cards, with the exception of course, Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time. But
and Siege Rhino.
Yeah, Siege Rhino is definitely a big one. Become Immense is a big one as well. Yeah. But like, you know, Treasure Cruise, Dig Through Time, a little too powerful, and they had to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I qualify for DC, and I have 2 days. Mm. I booked my flight on Tuesday. I went on Sunday. I booked my flight for Tuesday because I want to make sure I have enough time to practice a little bit and make sure I know what deck I'm playing. Mm-hmm. And then there's Monday is just this huge scramble. Yeah. I have to find a babysitter for Kyle. Lisa works at 5 in the morning. So I needed to find somebody who would come in at 4:30 in the morning, watch Kyle till 8:30, and then drop him off at the daycare center. Mm-hmm. And I was able to find that person, but I had to overpay just because it's not easy convincing somebody to come and watch your son at 4:30 in the morning. So we did that, booked the flight, went to DC, tested for a week, came back, and yeah, these past couple of weeks have been really, really hectic. And I have to say, I'm really happy to actually be back home and spending time with my family.
Yeah. Now, is there anything? Do you get like a break for a little while, or are you on to the next event?
So yeah, I came back on Monday, and now I have this weekend off, which is great because I actually finally have a weekend to spend with Lisa and Kyle. Mm-hmm. So you know, we're gonna go to the park, do all the little things, you know, and then actually next weekend is Grand Prix Vancouver, mm-hmm. which is once again Modern, and so I'll be headed off there, and I'm going to be trying to figure out what Modern deck to play. So I'll be testing that on stream. I have a 24-hour stream coming up this Monday. So that'll
another
be
another one.
Yes, so that'll be 24 hours of Modern. Wow. I can't do it like every other week like Kenji, you know. but I, you know, like maybe once a month I can do it. I'm getting too old for this kind of stuff. it should be fun.
So now you know, you mentioned that, you know, some of the pros don't really care for Modern. You know, what are your thoughts on Modern after the Pro Tour? Because I've been seeing a lot of discussions where, you know, people just aren't happy with it right now for a number of reasons. Are you one of them, or do you like the format?
I do like the format. It's just a change. I've been playing Modern for a while. Maybe I guess everything to me right now still seems new. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, partly because I kind of just got back into the game about a year and a half ago. You know, prior to that, I was living in the Caribbean and I was playing Magic off and on, but not really full time, and I wasn't really following the metagame of all the decks. Mm-hmm. So to me, Modern still seems like a kind of a new format, and I kind of like all the new little interactions, and I like just, you know, the diversity of the format. You can basically play just about any deck, and you wouldn't be surprised to see like one of 50 different decks top 8 a tournament. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I like about Modern. But what my opinions on it are vastly different than a lot of the professionals. Many of the members of Team China Fireball dislike Modern very much because they think there's just very little room to like kind of outmaneuver and kind of predict the metagame. Mm-hmm. You know, good players are able to accurately assess what the best cards are or what the best decks are going to be, and then come up with a really good game plan to beat those strategies. But in a field as diverse as Modern, it's a lot harder to do that because you just can't position your deck to beat everything.
Right, and that's something I learned. I used to be a really big Standard person. I played nothing but Standard for a while. From Innistrad to Theros, I played only Standard. And mm-hmm. then when I started playing Modern, I kind of realized the same thing, where when I got into Modern, it was like, okay, so Modern is basically asking yourself, what decks am I fine losing to? Because you're not going to be able to beat everything. And there are going to be those one or two matchups where you just have to kind of call it a wash. And I've been following Willy Edel for a long time. I love Jund, I love Rock, you know, and he's sort of the guru behind that. And typically when he writes a guide, he will say, you know, here is the list that I used. These are the two decks that I just sort of called and was like, I'm not going to really do anything because I just can't afford to do something against everything. And that's usually what I tell people who are getting into Modern, is that's the question you need to ask yourself, because sometimes you will face that weird Tezzeret artifact control deck that you didn't see coming. You're like, what was I supposed to do against this? I didn't prepare. And those decks just happen, and there's just nothing you can really do about it. So...
Yeah. I mean, I lost to a Living End deck, which...
Hey!
I was just like, hey guys, do you think we need any graveyard heat? Like, is Living End a thing? And they're just like, nah, we're just gonna lose to it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I guess we'll just lose Living End. And then, you know, round six of the Pro Tour, the guy's just like, cycle Street Wraith. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, well, I guess I'm dead, you know? So, yeah, that is kind of the thing. You just have to pick and choose your battles. And basically the best way to try to do that is just figure out at least what the most popular decks are and try to beat them.
Yeah.
Or play kind of, instead of playing like a deck like Junk or Blue, White, Red Control, you could lean towards playing more of a linear deck. And if you do that, you kind of care less about what the different decks there are in the field and hope that there's just less hate for that one particular strategy you're going for. So a good example is, you know, let's say, you know, people are not playing Affinity Hate. Mm-hmm. Then you play Affinity.
Yeah.
Or at this last Pro Tour, nobody really was thinking about Infect, and Infect did really well.
Yeah.
But now in the next tournament, everybody's going to have hate for Infect, so it's going to be bad. So then play a different combo deck that maybe people won't have hate cards for. So I think that's kind of like the fun part in trying to figure out, you know, because a lot of Modern is just correct deck choice.
Yeah.
There's always the best deck for a given tournament. And this Pro Tour is obviously going to change the landscape of Modern a significant amount. Mm-hmm. And I'm really trying my best to figure out what I need to do to do well at Grand Prix Vancouver.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you. So let's go back in time. So if I did my research correctly, you grew up in Los Angeles. Is that right?
I did.
Okay. And what was your childhood like? Like, well, how did you grow up?
I grew up in LA, yes, in a Koreatown, actually, Los Angeles. It's a very big, one of the largest Korean communities in the U.S., probably the largest. So it's a pretty big area in Los Angeles. But I had the typical strict, Asian parents. They made sure I studied a lot. You know, I went to after schools and, I had to get straight A's. Every time I got a B, I would be punished. So I tried my best not to get them. Fairly conservative. And
any siblings?
I do. I have a younger sister.
Okay.
That's all. Yeah, I have a younger sister, but she had some health problems when she was growing up. So, you know, they were a lot easier on her. You know, me being the firstborn boy, there's a lot of expectations growing up. So yeah, that's kind of how they raised me. I went to magnet school in middle school. I had to like wake up early in the morning, and then
you said magnet school?
A magnet school.
Okay, what is that?
Oh, a magnet school? Oh, it's just it's just kind of like a slightly more advanced middle school.
Okay.
This is so.
Were you gifted and talented?
I mean, maybe not so much anymore, but maybe when I was younger. Yeah.
Proudly.
It's incredible how stupid I've become since then.
I have that feeling too, Paul. I was in gifted and talented classes when I was a kid, and when I was a kid, we would play games like, do you ever play Mastermind?
I did not.
Okay, we played a game called Mastermind for fun, and it was this game with colored pegs. So mm-hmm. one person would hide behind like a platform, and they would assemble a combination of four or five colored pegs, and then you would have 20 guesses to determine what their row looked like. So mm-hmm. you would form your row, and then they would give you like three yellow pegs that were very general, like, okay, you got three right, and then you have to keep going. And we also played Mind Trap for fun. Mm-hmm. And, oh, yeah, I was full on. And I kind of have the same feelings you do where it's like, God, if I could just get a little bit of that back, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So then I went to middle school, and then my parents wanted me to take a test. Mm-hmm. And it was called the Washington Pre-College Test.
Ooh.
And, yeah, it was basically a test that was kind of supposed to emulate, like, the SATs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 12, and I was just like, all right, what the hell? Why are you making me take this test? I don't get it. So they're like, all right, we're going to be gone for the weekend. You're going to stay over at your aunt's place, and here's this SAT prep book.
Oh, no.
So over the weekend, I just was working on this book called 10 Real SATs and was just practicing all weekend. It was pretty ridiculous. But so then I take this test, and I – I do reasonably well. High enough so that they actually invited me to, you know, take some college classes. Mm-hmm. And if that went well, then you get accepted into what's known as the early entrance program at Cal State LA.
Wow.
And so then I got accepted into that, and then
So wait a minute. You got into college? You were accepted to a college at 12?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I started – so I got accepted – well, I took the test when I was 12, but I got accepted in the fall of 98, so I was 13.
My goodness. And you actually started going?
I did. And it was
wow.
I signed up for philosophy class, and I was just so nervous. I sat in the front, shaking. Everybody just so much bigger than me.
Wow.
You know, and then the professor goes up to me and is just like, Paul, what are your thoughts on the teachings of Descartes? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I was playing Pogs like last year. I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
Wow. So did you get to have did you get a chance to be a kid and do stupid things and play kid games, or were you just doing the philosophy and the hardcore stuff?
Yeah, well, I mean, even as a child, when I was young, I loved games. Yeah, I've always been a gamer. So that part never left me. And like I said, I was part of a program. So there were a bunch of other kids my age who all got accepted. Every year, they accept about 20 kids. And so, you know, I would hang out with these kids, and basically it was our high school. You know, between we had a room between classes, we'd go to the game room, basically, which was on campus, and you know, they had like an N64 set up. We'd play some games, and that's actually how I got into Magic. You know, I had a good friend of mine. His name is Alex Lee. He basically was like, "Hey, Paul, you should try out this. I know you like games. You should try out this game called Magic." And I was like, "Oh, what is this all about?" And we played a lot of Magic Online, and I mean a lot of Magic Online, and we lost a lot of packs and a lot of tickets. I mean, fortunately, he has, you know, he comes from a pretty well-off family, so we were able to afford all of the losses, because I would not be able to. But that's kind of how I got into gaming. So I guess I did kind of get to grow up with kind of kids my age, but but it was kind of, yeah, I guess a slightly different atmosphere. Mm-hmm.
Did Magic ever tempt you away from your studies or distract you?
Oh yeah. I mean, it did all the time, and that was definitely a big concern with me and my family when we were growing when I was growing up. You know, they're just like, "Why are you stop playing your Magic game? You know, go do this, go do that." I'm like, "Oh well, you know, as long as I get decent grades, it's okay, right?" And they're just like, "Stop playing your Magic game, stop playing your Magic game." And it was definitely one of the biggest reasons why me and my parents butt heads. Mm-hmm.
Do you still butt heads over it?
Well, at some point I was still playing a ton of Magic, and I basically told them that, you know, I wanted to maybe see if I can pursue Magic professionally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now that I'm a parent, I would also think that this is a ridiculous request. But at the time, I'm a, you know, punk kid. I don't know what's up. This is what I want to do. So I want to do it. Right. So they're just like, "No, you can't do that. Of course, you have to be a doctor, you know, bring respect to family, you know?" And I was just like, "Yeah, but I want to play Magic. I think I'm really good." They're like, "No, we're not going to support you." Mm. And so that's, you know, we butted heads to the point where I actually moved out of the house. Mm. Yeah. I moved out of the house to try to live the dream and become a professional Magic player. And, you know, I guess fortunately I was able to get there.
Yeah.
And I was having success, which kind of, you know, my parents were like, "Oh, wow, he actually can support himself doing this. He's actually not bad. You know what I mean? This is okay." And so then I, you know, after that, I got a job in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Working at an offshore sports book, and you know, they were paying pretty well too. So then my parents were like, "Oh, he can take care of himself." So once I stopped relying on them so much on everything, you know, that's when I think I got their respect, and now we're, you know, basically the best we've ever been. So. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. So I want to go back a little bit. So you did start off playing Magic Online. You were playing a lot. So were you playing with the goal of being a competitive player, or were you just playing for fun and then you had that breakthrough of, huh, maybe I could be competitive at
Oh
this?
yeah, absolutely not. I mean, when I first started playing, I had no idea what was going on.
No
You
plan.
know, I never had any aspirations early on to make it to the Pro Tour. And the only thing that don't like what actually drew me towards that was actually there was a magazine at the time called Sideboard Magazine. I don't know if you're familiar with
Oh
this. It's
yes.
a long time ago, but I would go to the local store, read up on who's doing well, and at the time, of course, Kai is just kicking butt left and right, winning
Love
every single
Kai.
Pro Tour, you know. And I'm just like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. What the hell? Like, he just never loses. Like, why is he? How is he so good? So then I started following the Pro Tour, and watching the Pro Tour is kind of what made me want to like one day aspire to make it onto the Pro Tour.
Now, did you have a backup plan? So, like, so you start this mission to get on the Pro Tour and be a competitive Magic player. What if it didn't work out? Like, what would you have done if that didn't pan out?
There was no that was not part of the equation. There was
Really?
no
So
plan.
you wouldn't have just said, "Okay, I'm going to go be a doctor and make mom and dad happy." There was none of
Well, I
that.
mean, I don't know what it was, but I played so much. I was just very confident that I would be able to get there if I could, given the opportunity. And if I didn't get there, yes, it would have been really, really disappointing. And you know what? You know what? The most likely thing would have been I would probably have gone into poker. I probably would have played poker. I was actually doing some of that to support myself when I was younger. You know, that's probably something that I would have looked at just because I also enjoyed doing it and it also made money, but Magic is a lot more fun.
Absolutely. So you're on the grind for a while, and eventually you qualify for your first pro tour. You qualify for Pro Tour Philadelphia. What was that like to finally get your foot in the door?
Well, actually, prior to that, I qualified for a Pro Tour in Amsterdam, but at the time they were just giving you $500 for the flight. And I was like 17, no money. So I just didn't. I just like, all right, ship the money. I'm not going. But then afterwards, yes, there was a Pro Tour Philadelphia. I pretty much spent like almost all the money I had saved up, you know, grinding Magic Online, saving tickets, selling the tickets, to buy a ticket to Philly, and it felt great. It's just like, you know, one of those things where it's like all that testing, finally. This I'm here. I'm at the Pro Tour. This is the dream. Let's do well. And this was actually a lot of people didn't like the format for this Pro Tour, but it was actually really awesome for me because the Pro Tour format was the skins format. It was the only skins format. And what that was every round had a dollar value. And starting from for example, round one was worth $100. If you win round one, you get $100.
Oh, wow.
Round two was worth $200, et cetera. And it just kept going up. And it was triple elimination. If you get three losses, you're out of the tournament. So I ended up going like, I don't know, 8-3 or 9-3, or something like that. And I ended with like, I ended up winning $1,100. And I was super stoked. I was just like, oh my God, $1,100. Magic is great, you know? And that was actually the same Pro Tour where the first time I met Luis Garvarias, and you know, I don't know who he was, but I just remember walking in on a group of guys doing a team draft, and I was just like, "Oh man, this guy that drafted a pretty sweet deck," and then I start talking to him a little bit, and he's just like, "Oh, I'm Fob on Modo," that was his account name, and I'm just like, "Oh man, yeah, I know who you are. We're in the same clan on Magic Online, and you know we play against each other all the time." So then he's like, "Hey, you want to draft with me?" And then it took him about 4 or 5 minutes before, you know, the Luis trolls began. And
The puns.
the puns and the bad jokes, and it hasn't stopped since. But it took him about 5 minutes to get really comfortable with me. And then we just, yeah, team drafted all weekend, and we were just crushing it left and right. And, you know, that's kind of Yeah, the beginnings of our friendship, I guess.
I want to talk about that friendship because I had LSV on my show for my 100th episode shortly before the Community Cup. So I went into the Community Cup having heard a lot about you. So I had pretty high expectations for meeting you.
Okay.
And LSV said some very sweet things about you when he was on my show. He basically said that you make the Pro Tours fun for him. He was like, I don't like going to Pro Tours without Paul Chian. And I was like, wow, like for LSV to say that, like how does it feel to hear that you make somebody's Pro Tour? Like that's huge.
Yeah. Well, part of going to the Pro Tour now, I mean, especially for somebody like Luis who's gone, a million times now, it's really just hanging out with good friends. All these professional Magic players, all the Channel Fireball guys, they all live so far away from each other. We have, Ben Stark who's from Florida. We have guys from Vegas. We're just all over the place. And the Pro Tour is one of the few tournaments where you can all meet, hang out, play Magic with each other for like a week. And it's just a whole lot of fun. And surrounding yourself with, people that you like, I think is very, very important. And for that reason, he needs somebody to torment with his jokes. So that's why he wants to see me there, probably.
It's funny because when he said that, I had heard that before. Like going back to Kai, when I had Kai on my show, Kai took a break for a while, and I asked Kai why he took a break. And he was like, quite simply, I didn't have anyone to play with. He's like, the friends that I came up through the ranks with were no longer there. And that was so foreign to me. I was like, you're Kai freaking Buddha, and you're not going to play because your friends aren't there? And only after I went to the Community Cup and I made friends with all of you did it hit me. And I was like, that's what LSV means when he says, these guys made the event, and that's what Kai meant because you guys made the Community Cup for me. I went into it thinking it was going to be this business get in, get out, we're just here to get a trophy. I had no idea that I was going to form bonds with people, and that was where it hit me. That's what these guys are talking about. It really is the people.
Oh yeah. Once again, the Community Cup was. I've had a lot of fun playing other tournaments, but the way Wizards set everything up, I just felt so welcome, and it was, like I said, it was the most fun I've had playing a tournament. First of all, team tournaments are just the best, and we were a giant team. It's like the more the better. Being able to cheer for everybody on your team and having every win mean so much was pretty great.
I was just so overwhelmed by the positivity of it. Like I said, there were people I wasn't sure I was going to get along with. I certainly wasn't the strongest member of the team, so I didn't know how that was going to go over. But I never once felt like there was any negativity or there was any sort of, what were you doing? How could you do this? It was always just you, and you were one of them. You and Scotty were the cheerleaders. All right, we got it. We got this round. It's okay. And I was just blown away by that because I expected there to be something, and there just wasn't.
Well, you kicked butt in the Ironwood Chef, though. You destroyed that thing.
I try. I try.
You had the highest score. You had the highest score in that one.
Yeah, I'm blushing now. So going back to LSV though, like what is really the secret to your friendship? Like what is it that brings you two together?
It's honestly, it's we have, now that I'm thinking about it, it's we have we just kind of all the growing pains of basically learning to get to where we need to be to have success in the Pro Tour. Basically, what happened was I ended up moving up with Luis, and all we did was talk about Magic and what it would mean to make it to the Pro Tour, and like what we would do if we got there. And we were basically able to basically share instantaneous success at the exact same time. We both made the national team, and from then on, like both of us just kept doing well. And we were traveling together, talking all the time. And I think just that those 2 or 3 years that we played competitively, I think we just grew a lot as people, and we did it together. And the fact that we were able to share those experiences, I think that's just like a bond that is just really hard to forget about. So despite the fact that I stepped away from the game for about 5 years, he's still one of the few people that I consider my best friends.
It also must help to have somebody who can you can relate to, because who can you really talk to? Like, oh man, I need to talk about this pro tour. I'm really stressed. There's not many people you can go to about that. So having somebody who understands, that rise and everything that comes with it, that must really help too.
I mean, definitely. We were always talking about that kind of stuff too. And I mean, I don't have enough good things to say about Luis and, like how what he's meant to me in my life. Like, like I said, I for a while I was by myself, without my family, and the only thing that basic the only reason why I'm here right now is because of the close friends that I had in my life, and for that reason I value, the closeness of these friendships very, very highly, as basically as much as I do my family, and yeah, he was definitely there for me when I was at my lowest.
So Pro Tour of Philadelphia happens. You start attending more events, you start doing well at them, and then you pick up and move to the Caribbean. Like, what was going on there?
So by that point, I was playing Magic professionally for about, I want to say, 2.5 to 3 years, and part of it was it stopped being as fun, and one part of that was just, I was playing a ton of Magic prior to even making the Pro Tour, so we're talking about 5 or 6 years of nonstop Magic, and it stopped being as fun. And I was kind of looking, and I wasn't making enough money, basically. I was just like, well, this is cool. At the time, Magic was didn't explode into popularity the way it did now, for example. Now there's a lot more opportunities to make money due to social exposure, social media, a lot of video content, article content, et cetera. But back then, there wasn't anything like that. And so, it was a kind of a struggle, and I was thinking, what do I want to do with my life 5 to 6 years from now? I started thinking like that. I was like 24, 23, I think. And so then I was offered this job in the Caribbean, and they were paying very well, and it looked like an awesome opportunity. And I thought about it for a while, but I just thought, in terms of the long term, that it was an excellent opportunity for me to see if I can pursue a career. And I took it because, I was given this job opportunity through my success as a Magic player. And, I didn't graduate college. Like, for this is like an opportunity that's only going to come by, like, it doesn't come by very often. And I figured I needed to grab it, and so I did. So I went out with a bang, though. Me, Mike Jacob, and Sam Black, we won the Team World Championships in 2008. And
Nice.
then I w moved. I went. I flew immediately to Curacao afterwards.
Thanks for the run, guys. Bye.
Team USA taking it down. I mean, I had a great team there too. So then I moved back. I moved to Curacao. And basically, for 5 years, all I did was watch sports, hang out at the beach, work out, and go out to the bars every night.
And your life, it changed dramatically after the move. You said that you didn't even have internet for the first year. You barely played any Magic.
It was definitely one of the years. It was like second or third year. Basically, I ended up moving in with a friend who had a house. Basically, they were renting a house, and one of the spots opened up. And the owner of the house basically was like, "Look, I don't want you guys to install any DSL lines in the house or cable lines." I was like, "What the hell? That doesn't make any sense." But we were stuck with the lease, so the only thing we had access to was this like terrible wireless. Like, they give you this modem that like is supposed to pick up some signals, and you're supposed to get it. It was basically dial up, so I
You're
could
like
not.
holding it in the air to get a signal.
I tried playing Magic Online once, and I was just like losing picks left and right, and I was just like, all right, I'm done. So I basically just did not have functional internet for a year, and all I did was just hang out with friends, and that's probably the coolest I've ever been too, because I was just actually doing things.
Was it difficult to adjust to your new surroundings, or did you enjoy your new life?
That was like kind of the point of my life where I was just really, really eager to just try new things. And a lot of that actually probably just came from the fact that I had this like new confidence. I was a little bit heavier set back in the day, and I had all the success in Magic, and I was just like, wow, yeah, if I put my mind at trying to accomplish something, I think I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, maybe I can, you know, get some of this fat off my belly. And so I was doing that and losing a bunch of weight, and then I was just like, all right, well, you know, people, you know, every girl starting to talk to me, it's like, it's just a weird feeling, and I'm not used to this. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go out, have fun, meet new people. And honestly, the transition wasn't so bad. Part of that is there was already a community in place. That they were the company that I worked for hired a bunch of previous professional Magic players. Mm-hmm. So it was really easy to make the transition because I just, you know, we were all professional Magic players at one point. So it wasn't very hard. But
It wasn't like you were keeping up with people and going, God, I wish that was me. You were enjoying yourself.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah.
It was fun. I like Curacao a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So while you were away, you also got married and you had a son. I love the baby Chian. I love the videos you make of him. He was adorable when you brought him to the Community Cup. I'm a big fan of Kyle. So you moved back to the U.S. And what made you decide to go back to Magic? You have this great life that you've made for yourself. Why go back?
Well, a lot of that was Kyle.
And
actually Lisa. I was enjoying the single life, being a bachelor, but but I met the love of my life, of course, in Lisa.
Beautiful wife.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we got married and we had Kyle, and we were basically just like, look, Kyle needs to grow up in the United States. We grew up in the U.S., and Kyle needs to be close to his family. You know, Lisa is very, very close with her family, and the fact that their grandchild is living thousands and thousands of miles away, she was not a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. And also, she wasn't a big fan of Curacao. Partially because she actually is allergic to mosquitoes.
Oh, really?
And that is really bad when you live in the Caribbean right now. Yeah. So at some point I got used to all the mosquitoes there just because, like, you know, they'll bite me. I'm like, whatever, it'll just go away. Whenever she gets a mosquito bite, it'll puff up and get really big.
Wow.
And it's impossible to not get bit by mosquitoes in Curacao. Mm-hmm. So it was like actively destroying her quality of life. So she couldn't wait to get out of there. Mm-hmm. So that, coupled with the fact that, you know, we both wanted Kyle to be closer to our parents, made me make the move back to the United States. And now that I'm back in the States, well, might as well play some Magic again. I couldn't play Magic because, you know, I was stranded on an island. Flying out of that island is really expensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now I'm back in the U.S. Might as well see what I have, what it takes. See if I have what it takes. And not only that, you know, the year before I left, that's when I started streaming. I was like, hey, maybe I can, you know, we saw some of the people that were streaming at the time, and I was like, you know, I think I might be able to do a better job. and this is, you know, when streaming first started.
Yeah.
So I downloaded the program, actually had working internet, and just started having fun, and Magic was fun for me again. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved back, naturally, I was just like, well, you know, maybe I'll play some Magic and see if I have what it takes to qualify for the Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to ask about Lisa, because I've told you before that you really should have a reality show, because you have this amazing cast of characters. You know, you have Lisa and you have Baby Chian. And whenever Lisa's on stream, I've watched your stream, she plays the role of the disinterested wife very well, where you're like, baby, look, I have all these followers. And she's like, where's the rest? Like, what's going on there? Like, is that just her playing it up, or is she really not feeling this?
You know, it's one of those things where, like, she just doesn't get Magic at all.
Okay.
So she's just not a Magic player. She's not really a gamer. So she doesn't understand how important certain things are, mm-hmm, in the gaming community. Where, you know, like, if she tells me that, like, some sweet new makeup pad is out, I would not bat an eye. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, check out, you know, this thing that just came out by Bobby Brown. I was like, okay, who's Bobby Brown? Like, yeah.
Bobby Brown does makeup? What?
I was like, how do you know this guy? You know? So it's probably a similar thing, mm-hmm, but But also, yeah, she just plays with it. She's having fun when I'm doing that kind of stuff because, you know, she's becoming kind of an entity as well.
Yeah.
You know, now that she comes home and I'm streaming and people, everybody knows who Mrs. Chion is.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny because, but yeah, she does like to give me a hard time, and it's funny how two of the people closest to me, are also two of the biggest trolls in my life, just Lisa and Luis. And there's now the joint entity known as Luisa. Basically, yeah. When both of them team up on me, yeah.
Poor guy.
yeah. I don't know. I guess maybe that's just the personalities I like. I don't know.
I guess, you know, I attract introverts. I guess so. Everybody has the people that they, you know, gravitate towards. So.
I suppose so.
So you decide you're going to come back to magic. You know, were you worried that you might not be able to pick up where you left off, or that you'd lost that something?
Oh, I definitely lost that something. I was bad. I definitely was just constantly missing things, not thinking of. But that's, you know, like, that's the thing. When you play magic, like, a lot of things you do when you play a lot become second nature, right? It's like you're an autopilot because you have muscle memory. You've done it over and over again. Mm-hmm. But when you don't play in those 5 years, you lose all of that. So now I find myself, you know, thinking harder about plays that were automatic in the past. I play a lot slower. I make more mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was going to take some time for me to shake off that rust. Yeah. And it took a while. And I still am probably not where I used to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe given more time, I can get there again. Also, people are a lot better at magic now than they used to be.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, trying to catch up to the young bloods is also something that is going to take a lot of work.
Or just even the climate. You know, there was a lot of talk over the weekend of the Pro Tour of just how difficult it is to qualify for Pro Tours now, where, you know, before you could roll into a GP of 500 people and your odds of winning were fairly good. But like you said, the GPs, 1,500, 2,000. I was at Richmond, 4,000 people. There were some pros that were like, fuck that.
Yeah. I know, I totally. But what's funny enough for me is I've been able to qualify a lot more ease. It's been a lot easier for me, rather, to qualify for Pro Tours via GPs.
Yeah.
I'm very good at top 8ing GPs, but winning PTQs, oh my God, impossible. Just can't win a PTQ to save my life.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I lost in three finals of PTQ. Like, I lost in three PTQ finals over the last 2 years. Ooh. Haven't won a single one, but GPs. Easy peasy. Yeah.
I can just imagine the people sitting across from you. They're like, hey, you're the guy that won the GP. What's your record? And you're like, on par.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's a PTQ guy. Can't possibly win.
So I want to talk about the weight loss, because when I look at pictures of you from before, I feel like I'm looking at a whole different person. Like, I've watched videos. You've done deck techs. I've seen pictures of you. I would not believe it's the same person.
Yeah, neither would my wife.
I think you said that. You said something at the community club, like, my wife wouldn't talk to me if I looked the way I did before, or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I definitely showed her. The first time I showed her pictures of what I used to look like, she's just like, mm-mm. Uh-uh. No, that was just not going to happen. And I was like, yeah, that's understandable. That's fair. You know.
Are you fine looking at pictures of your old self? Like, are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's you know, I'm proud of being able to lose the weight, you know, accomplishing what I did. I set goals for myself, and I mean, you know, like, I just basically what I ended up doing was I just like, look, I've got all this weight on me. I got up to 220 pounds, and I was like, I got to lose it all. And so over the course of basically 5-6 years, all I did, I was working out four or five times a week.
Wow.
When I moved to Curacao, I took it to the next level too, because there's not a lot to do on a little tropical island.
Yeah.
So, I mean, many times I would just, you know, go to the gym for an hour and a half, take a little break, then I would play basketball for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And I would do this several times a week. So I'm working out 3 hours a day, like 4 or 5 times a week. I'm bound to lose some weight.
Yeah.
So in Curacao, I was able to lose a lot of weight. And right now, I'm slowly packing it back on. being a dad and moving back to, like, so I got to definitely live up to one of my resolutions, which is to kind of get back into shape.
Now, had you been a bigger guy all of your life? Like, were you picked on at all, or did you have any health problems, or this, you just got tired of being heavy?
No, no. It's funny. Like, I was a chubby kid, but I wasn't like ever super fat.
Okay.
And I ended up getting super fat when I was actually hanging out with Luis.
Thanks, Luis.
Yeah. That's where we would just hump together all the time. That's all we did. We would play magic, eat. This was like our average day. All right. We would wake up, play magic, go to Subway, and we would both get 3-foot-long subs.
Per person?
Yes. We would eat 3-foot-long subs. You know, maybe over the course of an hour and a half or something, we would eat, but we would finish all of them, and then we would play more magic. Then it would be dinner time, because we'd always wake up super late. Mm-hmm. It'd be dinner time. Then we'd go to like the local, you know, pie shop or whatever, and we would, you know, get a full dinner, get a slice of pie, go back home, play more magic.
Wow.
Then it would be midnight. We got to get our midnight snack, so we go to Jack in the Box, get a Jumbo Jack curly fries. Go back home, play more magic, and go to sleep at 3 or 4 in the morning. And we just did this every day for like a year, and I gained almost 40 pounds in 1 year.
Wow.
It was absurd. I just had no regard for what I looked like. I just liked to eat, and I just wanted to play magic. That's all I wanted to do.
And he lost a bunch of weight too. Like, he looks great.
Yeah. I don't know if any of that has to do with, you know, kind of seeing that I lost the weight. Mm-hmm. But I mean, his transformation's been amazing too. And he did it a lot more with the diet. Mm-hmm. Whereas I try to eat well, but a lot of mine was just
No, tough. You don't. I see your feed, Paul Chion. You make me hungry just from looking at your feed.
back in the day, when I was in Curacao, sorry, I would try to eat well, but yes, a lot of meat for me was definitely just going to the gym, because I would, you know, I was just like, once I got to where I wanted to be, I was just like, well, I can eat whatever I want. I just go to the gym. Yeah, I don't have to worry about it, because there's nothing else to do anyways.
Yeah.
But now it's like there's so much to do, and it's hard. It's harder for me to be like, oh, I gotta go to the gym. Oh, my back hurts a little bit though. I'm not gonna go.
But I still get so jealous of you. Like, I'll look at your feed, and you'll be posting all this delicious food, and then you show up in a feature match looking all buff and stuff, and you've got your little arms and your little pecs, and I'm like, how does he do it? Like, it went straight to my thighs just looking at it. Like, oh, we hate you.
Yeah, well, that's many years of hard work. Like I said, I'm slowly regressing, but yeah. As long as I focus at least maintaining the glamour muscles, mm-hmm. I'll be okay. Glamour muscles being the chest and the arms.
And it's well documented that you love food. Like, I read an article that you were covered in. They did some coverage on you for the Pro Tour, and you said that, you know, even when I go on vacation, I plan everything around what I'm eating. That's how much I love food. Like, is it hard for you to stay on the narrow because how much you love food?
Well, yeah, like I said, recently, when I go on vacation, when I go to these Pro Tours, everything just gets thrown out the window, and I just want to enjoy myself. I try to be much better when I'm at home. Mm-hmm. So when I'm at home, I try to make sure, you know, I go to the gym, I cook my own breakfast, and it's almost always the same thing. It's like egg whites with a little bit of cheese and some vegetables, and, you know, that's what I eat in the morning. And then for dinner, it's, you know, like, if I'm lazy, I'll just go to Subway or something. If not, then maybe we'll cook some chicken breast and vegetables with a little bit of rice. So, like, you know, I know what it takes to eat healthy, but I also love to eat very, very filthy food.
Filthy, Chion, you're a father. Filthy. What's wrong with you? So you seem to have it all right now, Paul. I mean, you've got beautiful wife, beautiful baby, successful comeback, which is not easy to do in a game you love. You're now able to make a living doing what you love to do. Would you agree that you're basically living the dream right now?
You know, life is good right now. I feel so blessed. Yes. I have an amazing wife. She's just the best mom. She just takes care of almost everything. I feel like I'm another child she's taking care of, you know. Like, I would just be totally lost without her. And, you know, Kyle is amazing. I love him so much. I would just do anything for him. And it feels great to make it back onto the Pro Tour, and also to have all the support that I've been getting. It's been just amazing. having all these people kind of root me on as I'm trying to qualify for the Pro Tour, it definitely gives me extra motivation when I enter these tournaments. And hopefully I can keep this going. Streaming Magic is a lot of fun, and hopefully it's something that will still keep me afloat for the time being. Lisa works right now, but I'm doing the streaming thing, and I'm trying to make more content for the website, and if I have more success at the Pro Tour, that'll also help, of course. So and also just doing well, getting the exposure, hopefully that'll lead to better things for me in the future as well. So I'm crossing my fingers, but so far 2015 has just it couldn't have started off any better. I came into this year just with the goal of hopefully trying to hit silver by the end of the year. Take it nice and slow, and maybe I can make the gravy train next year. And it took me about a month to hit silver. So now I'm aiming for gold. It'll be 12 more pro points, but I do have to do well in the upcoming tournaments. But I'm dedicated, I'm motivated, I want to do well, and I hope that a little bit of luck also comes my way so that I can actually fully live the dream, which is, of course, making it onto the gravy train.
Yeah, I watched the footage of you when you did your you'd offered a 24-hour stream if you got so many subscribers, and I watched the subscribers blow up, and I watched how emotional you got, and you were really overwhelmed, and I was overwhelmed for you, and I think that's part of the reason why we enjoy you so much is because you are so humble, and you don't seem like you take anything for granted, and you're just so happy to be here, and it's infectious. You were emotional, and I got emotional. I was watching it at work. And I'm sitting at my desk and I'm like, Paul, you got all these subscribers and people are like, what are you watching? And
Absolutely. It just, I mean, everything. I would not be anywhere. I would not be where I am in my life if it wasn't for the game of Magic. And I definitely appreciate everything. Like I said, I've had to kind of fend for myself since I was like 16, and I mean, I'm not even used to like getting gifts, Like it's so having that kind of outpour happen all in one day, from all these people, it blew my mind. I never expected that something like that could ever possibly happen, and it was awesome. Like I said, I can't thank all the people enough for being there watching the stream and supporting the stream. It's that day in particular was one that I definitely won't be forgetting for the rest of my life.
That was an awesome day. So
It was.
where do you see yourself in the next year or two? You'd mentioned going for gold. Do you have any other goals in mind or anything planned that you definitely want to do, or are you just, taking it as it comes?
Yeah, I have a lot of plans with like kind of where I want to maybe take the stream. I want to just continue to grow everything so that I can make this a sustainable thing. So in terms of like my stream and possibly making more content, like I need to figure out more ways to actually realistically keep doing what I'm doing right now, like to be able to do this for a living. And so I got to get a little more creative and figure something out, and I'm hoping that by year's end I'm like in a good place where I won't have to be worrying about paying the bills, and that like everything I'm doing is actually going to work out. But so far so good. I'm definitely like I'm building up momentum. Doing well at tournaments has definitely helped out, and I'm hoping to continue winning and continue growing the stream and all that stuff. But as far as Magic goes, I would like to make it to the gravy train, hit gold, and I want to have the best stream out there for Magic the Gathering. But I have some stiff competition.
Well, I think you're on the way. Like I said, I enjoy what you do. I probably would enjoy it even if I wasn't on the cup with you. You're positive, you're humble. I have a couple of friends who think you're cute. You've really got it going, so it's totally fine. So I'm rooting for you, and if I can help in any way, please let me know.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So I have a couple questions from Twitter because I put the call out there for some questions, some of which you answered on Twitter.
yeah, my bad.
I was like, Paul, save it for the show.
Oops.
That's okay. So the first question I have is from at DJKMTG, and he wants to know, how has streaming changed your view of the community, and what are your thoughts on the community?
Well, as we just touched upon earlier, I love the Magic community. It's far more positive than many other gaming communities.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Magic is definitely a different game where it's, you know, you have your games where you just play and it's just kind of like a hobby. Magic is like, it's like you, it consumes you. It's like your life, you know, like the people you meet playing Magic, it's, you know, I don't know what it is, but people establish this bond when you play Magic, and it's a lot closer and deeper than I think many other games.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, when I saw like the support that I got from the community while streaming, I was surprised, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, the Magic community is pretty freaking awesome. I love them. These guys are also part of the reason why that I was, somebody nominated me to get on the Community Cup. So thank you, all of you guys. And, I appreciate what, you know, everything that the community's done to kind of help me out and support me, and I hope to contribute as much as I can to the Magic community, you know, from here on out.
That reminds me, I was watching the strange reference. I was watching the trailer for Pitch Perfect 2.
Okay.
And there's a line in the trailer where Anna Kendrick says, you know, when I look back on this, I'm not going to remember performing and I'm not going to remember competing. I'm going to remember you weirdos. And I was like, yeah, like I'm not going to remember my show and I'm not going to remember going to the GPs I went to. And maybe, you know, it's because I'm not as competitive or maybe I'm not as good. But, you know, I just think about 10 years from now, I'm probably not going to remember this show. I'm going to remember who I had on it and
right.
who I went to these events with. And that's really what accounts. So
mm-hmm. It's the people you meet.
So at Second Main Phase would like to know, do you have any tips for balancing gaming and family life? Because you are very much a family man.
Yeah.
How do you keep it all going?
It's tough. But I make sure that, you know, outside of all the things that I do that are Magic related, which is a lot,
mm-hmm.
You know, pretty much every other minute of my life is spent, you know, trying to, you know, basically I try to spend the rest of my time with my family.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every opportunity I get, you know, every morning I'm spending time with Kyle. You know, it's only a couple hours before I drop him off at daycare, but I still enjoy all of that stuff. And, you know, any weekends we have together, I try to spend time with them. I try to help Lisa as much as I can. And sometimes I feel bad because I feel like I can't because, you know, I have to go to these Magic tournaments. So, you know, we've definitely kind of went through the year's Grand Prix schedule, for example, and we kind of talked about the ones that I can and cannot go to. So basically the East Coast ones are off limits because I lose too much time.
Yeah.
And hell, you know, like I said, even since she doesn't do the Magic thing very much, I was trying to convince her. I was like, hey, I got to go to the Pro Tour. She's like, but wait, you're going to be gone for a week? And I was just like, yeah, but I really need to go to this. And you know, she's been a lot more understandable. I mean, we've definitely, you know, butted heads here and there, but she knows that this is my passion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she knew this even when we first met, that this is kind of what I did before. And she knows how much I love the game. And she's definitely, after we've had a few talks, she's definitely been a lot more supportive. And I can't thank her enough for basically being the super mom that she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, at Hugo Elaine would like to know, how much do you love Numot the Nummy more than Kyle?
I think Numot the Nummy is great. He has a very entertaining stream. Very nice guy. Very fun person to watch. In terms of my favorite Cheons, he's number four. Actually, no, wait, that doesn't even work because I have my actual family. But in terms of maybe the people that you guys might know, favorite Cheons, the ranking goes Kyle and Lisa at 1A and 1B. And then there's Luis Cheon, and then maybe Kenji. Yeah, he'll be there.
Love Kenji, and I think you hung out with another one of my favorites. Did you hang out with KYT at the Pro Tour?
Yes, he beat me soundly day two of the
Okay.
Pro Tour. It was pretty great. Like, we were both knocked out of any contention for money, but we were just playing for fun. And at that point, I was already 0-4 on the day, and I was like, "All right, well, let's just play for fun." And he beat me in about 7 minutes, and I'm just like, "All right, my deck's terrible. I don't want to play any more Magic."
I love KYT. I have a little crush on him, so I call him all sorts of names. I call him my little dragon roll, my little wonton. So he's my buddy. And when he, I think there was a tweet where he said he was playing against you or he was hanging out with you, and I was like, well, Paul is really just the prettier version of you, and KYT is like, yeah, I'll agree with that. So
But he beat me, so he's got the chips.
yeah, he's a good guy. And then the last question I have here, this is a personal one. Okay, Paul. Paul. Paul? What's that about? Like, people will
Everybody.
just tweet your name. Like,
Yeah.
you know, what is that?
It's actually become pretty detrimental to coverage at this point. I was actually watching the Vintage Super League the other day, and I was just like, I made like a comment or something, and so people saw that I was online, and then everybody just spammed the chat with Paul.
Paul.
Paul, and the chat just became useless for 5 minutes, as it always
Oh
does.
no.
And then David Williams actually got very upset. He was like, "This is not productive to the chat whatsoever. Can you guys please stop spamming Paul?" But yeah, it's another thing. You know, this is the one problem with Luis being as famous and popular as he is now. He could get away with basically saying anything. And so even if it's not necessarily clever or funny, if he just repeats it many times over and over again, it just becomes a thing. So basically, the thing that he decided to go for was just repeating Paul for no reason whatsoever, just so that I would respond to him, and then he would say nothing. So he would just be like, "Paul, Paul, Paul, Paul." And then now everybody feels the need to Paul it up. And so that's how it became a thing. There's no funny story or anything. It was just Luis just being Luis.
Yeah, I choose to read it with different inflections, almost like a Pokemon. So whenever I see the spam happening, it's like, Paul, 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 Paul. And
And then there was like, apparently at one of the GPs too, then they started like adding my name to all kinds of magic cards, like Repaul and Maelstrom Pulse, and
Cryptic Paul Command, Cryptic Paul Man, okay.
it's getting out of hand, but I learned a long time ago that there's just no point fighting it, and I might as well just learn to embrace it. And I'll probably end up just making some t-shirts with Paul on it or something, just to
You should get that merch, you
yeah
know?
that's right that's right gotta take advantage. Strike while the iron's hot. Strike while the iron's Paul.
Another thing you need to do, I don't know if you know this, but I've had that Yobaseo song in my head. I think since you played that, I actually went and downloaded it and I freaking love it. So you need to keep the K-pop coming because I listen to your stream just to see what songs you're playing.
Yeah, I gotta update that thing. There's a few more K-pop songs, but I gotta find the time. The last, it's been pretty hectic last week, but I might be able to upload some new songs this weekend. Yeah,
Please do. Please do.
definitely.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show, Paul, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Okay, well, yeah, as I hope many of you already know, I stream basically 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, on twitch.tv/haumph.
Humph.
Yeah, Haumph. The best way to be able to follow me is, of course, on Twitter at Haumph. And then you'll get updates as to when I stream. I normally do it from basically 11 a.m. to about 5 or 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Now, if I have a tournament I go to, I generally don't stream on Fridays. So that's how you'll be able to reach me. But yeah, you guys should totally come watch as I incinerate tickets right in front of your eyes.
And they can find your content on Channel Fireball.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I make a weekly video for them on a weekly video for channelfireball.com, and I also host a Magic TV every week, which is on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. on twitch.tv/channelfireball, where I'm joined by Mashi Scanlan
He's
and
cute.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out
Yeah,
there.
just throwing it in there. Yes, Mashi Scanlan and you, either Tom Martell or Josh Utterleighton, and we just basically talk about all things magic for the week. So it's just a weekly show.
I remember the first time I caught one of those episodes, I was struck by two things. One, how skinny your legs were. Like, you had these little cargo shorts on and you had these little bird legs. And
Yeah.
I was like, Paul, your little legs are so skinny. And then number two, I was like, who's the cute guy? And then that was Mashi. I'd never
That
heard of
was
him before.
Mashi. Yeah.
Right?
You know, it's so sad too, because like I said, I've been working on the glamour muscles, but you know, the calves, you know, I used to do a lot of plyometric training, but the calves have just disappeared. It's gone. I gotta get them back.
As my friends would say, you got to work on those gams, Miss Cheon.
Yeah.
Just, you
Never
got to
skip
do
leg day. Never skip
that.
leg day. I know. Well, I'm skipping all the days, so it's, yeah, it shows a lot
Well, Paul, it has been lovely having you on the show. Thank you so much for doing this, and I look forward to seeing you again at an event because it was great playing with you at the Cup, and I really did get attached to you, and I'm so happy for all your success, and I wish you all the best. So please keep it up.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. And if anybody's enjoyed listening to the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on gatheringmagic.com. The show is available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review or some stars. You can follow the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can follow me at Original Estrus, and you can email the show at thedecktees@gmail.com. Thank you everybody so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.